where we've been exploring various dimensions of the territory that contemplating death, that reflecting on mortality brings us into contact with. And I think we see that, or it makes perhaps clear why it is it's not a sort of common or popular everyday thing to engage with. It can challenge us in lots of ways, equally as it can be free or opening or touching in ways that we may appreciate. It's often the case that we have some hesitancy, understandable hesitancy, in entering into such territory. And as we go through and continue this afternoon, I think really just wanting to emphasize the importance of being sensitive, of being compassionate, of being kindly towards oneself in wherever and however one finds oneself in this process, whether feeling engaged with or not so engaged with, touched by or not so touched by, feeling, in fact, whatever we might be experiencing, to in a way trust the larger intention of our bringing ourselves here, bringing ourselves into contact with whatever it is that will be and is being our experience. And what I'd like to speak about this afternoon, and really it's the final piece of territory that I'd like to touch upon, bearing in mind I think it's a much, you know, the subject isn't like we'll be completed by the end of the weekend. I guess you know that. But many of the pieces of territory have further depths to plumb, and there are further areas of the territory which maybe we haven't specifically engaged with as such. And yet what seems to me what stands out in terms of this process of first of all acknowledging and turning towards mortality, we can equally say turning towards the temporariness of ourselves and each other and this world, in fact, also, we see how this asks us to let go of holding on to wanting it to be a certain way, because we see it's not in our control. Holding on to some way in which we believe ourselves to be defined by experience, even that we believe life to be defined by the content of what it reveals. As we see that things, and not just things, but of course this thing, these things, bodies, hearts, minds, not just changing, but passing away in their own time, all of them having arisen, coming into being according to and shaped by conditions and supports. As those conditions change, as those supports drop away, changing and dissolving ultimately, that the imperative, the invitation to let go becomes an imperative, but even more so we see we have no choice. We cannot hold on. We cannot hold on. There's a sense of loss that I spoke about that we anticipate as the result of letting go. And yet, that loss is not actually what is found when we let go. We associate not holding on with an increased risk of loss. But in truth, when we look at our lives, we see that holding on doesn't keep things. And that letting go allows things to move. And in fact, releases a lot of the pain around the endings that are inevitable. But this sense of loss, this out of controlness, this not knowing so much, so quickly, so easily believing we know who we are in some definitive way, allowing that to become a little more amorphous or porous, there is a vulnerability. There is a profound vulnerability we encounter. And that vulnerability, again, we associate it with loss and with danger. And we turn away from it easily, quickly. But in itself, it's not dangerous. Though it's certainly not always comfortable. And there's a deeper loss that it is speaking to us of that we don't necessarily see, because when we touch into loss, we're talking a lot about loss in the territory of death or mortality. What happens is we don't just encounter any particular loss, we encounter all of the loss. It's like the vibration or the frequency or the resonance doesn't distinguish, and so it's all there for us. So when we encounter even something small in the way of loss, it may be that we feel the impact of all the losses of our life. And that's why sometimes it doesn't quite make sense to us how we are impacted. And in this, the loss of a sense of certainty of who I am is one of those that we also resist, because it carries with it this weight of loss, that identity and a certainty about who I am is the way in which we try and create in the midst of a circumstance where gain and loss is inevitable, where we receive, but also we are required to release so many things. That sense of certainty of self is the way we try and create a defense or a solid fixed place of me from which I can handle or try to handle all of this movement that is life, that is fluid, that is flowing. And so it doesn't quite work, because what we're trying to hold in that central place of security, fixity, solidity is also fluid, is also changing. And yet the contraction, the tightness that happens when we try and hold on is a way of somehow trying to replicate a place we can rest. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. But the one of the elements, and perhaps the deepest element of loss and vulnerability that we're in contact with, is the loss of a conscious, felt, and known awareness of the deeper dimension of our lives, that somehow seems to be subsumed or could say buried, which is an interesting word in this context, but becomes kind of somehow lost to us in the degree, the intensity, the complication and the entanglements of the activities of the surface of our life. And so whether or not we might have language for this, or a felt sense for this, or a necessarily even any idea of what I might be talking about here, which I'm not assuming you have or should have, what happens, it seems, is we take birth in unconsciousness. We become lost in the, we could say, the fog of movement, of activity, and being drawn along by it, being drawn along by it, identifying with the things that appear, that move, that disappear, taking these to be who I am, taking this to be the entirety of life. And this is very much what then becomes solidified or somehow it becomes the shared viewpoint with regard to the world that we can essentially call a materialist or materialistic thing, that this is what's most real. And spiritual teachings in the Buddha's teachings and in all authentic spiritual traditions speak to us in a way to try and point out, to remind us that this is not all there is to life. That there is more to discover. That becoming unconscious in the flow of experience is to become lost in it and defined by it. To become conscious of it and to allow it to move through, to see how it moves through, is to begin to have the possibility of recognizing, understanding again something we've known but perhaps forgotten, lost touch with, or become distant from. So the Buddha spoke of this in different ways at different times. He once said, "Friends, there is that which is unborn, unbecome, unmade, uncompounded. And if there were not this which is unborn, unbecome, unmade, uncompounded, then there would be no deliverance here visible from that which is born, become, made, compounded. But since there is this unborn, unbecome, unmade, uncompounded, therefore a deliverance is visible from that which is born, become, made, compounded." It's the Buddha speaking, as I think the wisest sages have spoken, of something in terms of what it is not. Because whenever we try and speak in this territory of what it might be, we end up in contradiction, confusion, and unfortunately all too often war, actually. It goes from the experience to the articulation, not very comfortably. From that which can be known directly to move into the realm of what can be spoken, not at all successfully. And again, another from the Buddha here. "Friends, there exists that condition wherein is neither earth nor water nor fire nor air, neither space nor consciousness nor nothingness, where there is neither this world nor a world beyond nor both, nor moon and sun. And there, I declare, is no coming to birth, no going from life, no duration, no time, no falling, no arising." And just picking up on, I think, as was spoken earlier, it is not something fixed, it moves not on, it is not based on anything. This indeed is the end of suffering. So again, the Buddha's speaking in terms of some paired opposites. And here, just to pick a couple, there is no going, there is no arising. There is, it's not fixed nor moving. And it's kind of like, what is he talking about? What is he talking about? We might say. In the practice,
as we
start to see the tendency of the mind to pick up particular things and to either take them as somehow meaning something about me, as defining me in a certain way, as being my possession or my experience, what happens as we do that is we create a sense of a something over there, the object, and the someone over here, the subject. And that seems to have a reality to it that is basically the framework of the conventional world. And when we operate within that and only within that, then clearly there is birth and death of that which we take ourselves to be. And it can only be so. And from this there cannot be any escape. And yet, as we see this process, as we begin to observe it and reflect upon it, we may also notice that the very fact this can be known, that there is this capacity of presence, of awareness, of just, you could say mindfulness equally, that just the knowing of the experience that somehow is not defined by the content of it. It's like we could talk about the space in which the experience is happening, the life in which birth and death are showing or are being revealed, and yet in that somehow that's not all that's there, and yet there's nothing else that one can put one's finger on or point to. And yet something, when it's all included and yet not taken hold of, that can speak to us. And I'm very aware when I endeavour to put some words in this territory that the words are never really going to go very far. And so my invitation is just to listen and see what might resonate for you that may not be in the realm of the words or the comprehension. There's a piece from Siddhartha, the book by Hermann Hesse, which speaks somewhat to this. And in this story, Siddhartha, as maybe many of you know, I don't know, he's, as a character, essentially a contemporary, a spiritual seeker in the time of the Buddha. He's not the Buddha, although they share the same first name, Siddhartha. And he's gone through many challenges and work and development in his practice, and then into actually a real struggle and despair, and eventually ends up sitting beside a river. This becomes his practice. And so I just want to read this piece. Siddhartha listened. He was now listening intently, completely absorbed, quite empty, taking in everything. He felt that he had now completely learned the art of listening. He had often heard all this before, all these numerous voices in the river. But today they sounded different. He could no longer distinguish the different voices, the merry voice from the weeping one, the childish from the manly one. They all belonged to each other. The lament of those who yearn, the laughter of the wise, the cry of the indignant, and the moan of the dying. They were all interwoven and interlocked, entwined in a thousand ways. All the voices, all the goals, all the yearnings, the sorrows, the pleasures, all the good and the harmful, all of them together with the world, all of them together with the stream of events and the music of life. When Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, to the song of a thousand voices, when he did not listen to the sorrow or the laughter, did not bind himself to any one particular voice and absorb it into himself, but heard them all, the unity, then the great song of a thousand voices consisted of one word, perfection. There's a way in which it's really hard to see what's here, because we're sort of trained to pick up the things that are here, that are moving, that are appearing and disappearing. And it's kind of hard to see beyond that. To see what else can be revealed. And for myself, I had what was quite a beautiful and remarkable experience on one time when I was practicing in a monastery in India. And I'd been at this place in Bodh Gaya previously and very much enjoyed the opportunity and the practice there, so I had returned. And one of the features that I very much enjoyed of this place was the fact that the monasteries were really refuges for all beings. And something beautiful in Asia, that you find all sorts of people and creatures turning up at monasteries and for the most part just being welcomed. And so there's, you know, chickens and dogs and cats and, you know, elderly people who don't have a retirement plan, who sometimes equally come and inhabit the monasteries. But one of the groups of such creatures were the little puppies, the young puppies that were there, that I used to very much enjoy the contact with. And they were so full of life and bright, and they would run about on the lawn and joy chasing each other and sometimes yelping when they got into trouble with something larger, like one of the adult dogs. And when we'd be doing walking meditation, they'd sometimes come and run along and bang into your foot when you're walking to see if you're really mindful and whether you're going to, you know, lose your balance, or help you with your dinner if you put it down and looked away for half a moment, you know, thinking probably, you know, they'd be helpful. It was probably a little bit sort of an easy topic for one's heart to be very engaged with, these little creatures. And I really love them. And then one day, after I'd been practicing for a week or two there, I can't remember exactly now, it struck me with incredible force, the realization that all the way through that time, I thought I'd been with the same puppies I'd been with last year. I absolutely was sure these were the same beings. And it was obvious in that moment of realizing the unconscious assumption that, of course not, those puppies were no longer puppies from the year before. They had grown up into, you know, young adult dogs. They were not these little beings running around. These ones were new. And there was some way in which it just struck me with, first of all, the way in which one gets fooled into imagining the continuity of something which can only be changing. And yet, at the same time, this recognition of, oh, yeah, the puppies keep changing, but puppy nature is unchanging. That there's something shining out of and through these beings that animates them that hasn't changed at all. There's something we can see not in, but through all of this. Not revealed in anything particular, but only by actually when we sort of step back from all of it, not stepping out of it or away from it, but just somehow kind of softening the focus, allowing it all to be here, without taking hold of anything, but in no way stepping back from a fullness of participation. There's something which is no thing. We could call the nature of things, which we can come to understand, which we can know, which we see as obviously and unarguably neither existent nor non-existent, neither moving nor still, or both. We could say both moving and still. That simply is what's here. And in and through which all of this is revealed. And yet which isn't separate from any of it, nor defined by it. And this understanding, this realization, this recognition, the human organism has the capacity for. And ultimately finds its fulfillment in its freedom and its rest. In the midst of the struggles and the confusions and the conflicts and the imperfections of it all. Not defined by nor separate from anything nor all of it. To not take birth in the particularities of our experience or circumstance, but nor to take birth apart from them. To take birth is to be subject to death. This is unstoppable. There's a kind of very, I find, amusing story of a monk, Ajahn Amaro, he's an American Buddhist monk who I know a little. He was once at a conference on sort of different religious perspectives on birth control. And, you know, it was contraception, sterilization, and abortion, as it was then described. And someone was asking him for the Buddhist view on all of this, and he responded, well, actually, as far as I can see, the whole of the Buddhist teaching is concerned with rebirth control. The recognizing that when we identify with that which is changing and subject to passing, we take birth that will inevitably end in death. Without that identification, there is a freedom. There is a capacity to know and to realize that which the Buddha spoke of when he spoke of the deathless. So immediate, so close, so surprisingly familiar to us all, that most of the time we don't notice it. Just as the very air around us we take for granted, because it's always there. Can't see it, and yet we're breathing it. If it wasn't here, neither would we be. what might be revealed if we were to be in our lives so wholeheartedly present, so devotedly interested in understanding what is here. What is this? What is now? Just this is really one of the invitations of our contemplation and our practice, to understand the nature of that which is born and dies, and the nature of that which is unborn and undying. So just I'd like to invite you to take a moment to turn your attention to where you are, to be aware if there may be the urge to take a position, to form a view in the sense of yes, I agree, or I know, or I don't agree, or I don't know, and all those quite reasonable and understandable positions we might be inclined towards. But seeing what it's like to not land, what it might be like to not land in any one place here, what it might be to allow the mind's conceiving to go quiet in this territory, to perhaps find the space and trust of heart to abide in the unknowing, from which true knowledge arises. And as and when you feel